Hello, Cleveland, and welcome back to another edition of the Dogland Podcast, brought to you by Dogs by Nature, Vox Media, and SB Nation. I am your host, Jackson McCurry, and on today's episode, there's no Anthony Jokey, but like he mentioned in the last episode, we got a double shot of Jack on this episode, because joining me today as we start our off-season coverage on the podcast, it is none other than Jack Duffin of the OBR, former colleague over here at the Dogland, but it's always good to have him on with us. Jack, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Oh, hey, Christmas is here. This is the run from this moment, especially through to the middle of March when we get free agency. That is Christmas Day, the first like day of free agency where it goes nuts. And then, yeah, the draft's fun as well. And then we get the lull. That's when people say, oh, it's the off season when nothing happens. Like 2 weeks after the draft through to week one of the season. Well, yeah, pretty much that. It's pretty boring, including the preseason.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. Like this is the fun time. Like obviously the on-field product is always fun, but when you have a bad year like we did and it's back-to-back bad seasons, the only thing we look forward to is how can we make this team better to get one step closer to the Super Bowl, and that's the offseason. Like we love the draft, we love free agency, but things are changing here at this kind somewhat this time, Jack, because the Browns are in a spot where we have the franchise quarterback, we hope, and Deshaun Watson. A lot of our core is locked up for the next several years. The Browns are sitting in a spot where they now have to start making some moves that these other contenders have made to create flexibility to continue to make those moves. So the last 5 years or so, we've been like, we got cap space, we have draft picks, we can make these moves, but it's like now we're limited in both aspects. But it's still fun to talk about all the possibilities that the Browns could do, even though we're limited in our resources.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. You look at that offensive side of the ball, and I can't wait to write on it once we get nearer to the season. But I don't think there'll be another team with that many 10 million plus players on the offensive side of the ball. You've got a quarterback, you've got a running back, you've got a tight end, you've got a wide receiver. You could have a second wide receiver in Donovan Peoples-Jones. You've got a right tackle, you've got two guards. You're legit looking at eight of the 11, because you've got a third wide receiver, a left tackle, and a center that aren't making 10 million plus. Everyone else will be making 10 million plus. So when people are like, oh, just add a $20 million wide receiver in there, it'll be fine. It's like, yeah, with what money? It's not sustainable in its current form. If anything, they need to subtract, let alone add in its own right. So it's going to be fascinating to see how long they can hold this together, because it's not going to last very long.
No, not at all. And I think that's why, like, and we won't even dive into it, but the discussion the last couple of weeks has been trading Nick Chubb. And I even brought it up during the season. I was like, if you guys want another big time wide receiver, not talking about DeAndre Hopkins, not talking about Stephon Diggs now, which everybody seems to think is a possibility just because he was mad he didn't get enough targets yesterday in the game. But like, if you want to get another playmaker of some sort, are you going to trade Nick Chubb for that? And people were like, I think the poll was 77% said no. And it's like, well, someone's going to have to go. And I think we've all said it's Chubb or Teller. Everybody's like, well, we can't get rid of either one of them. Like that's been the whole discussion, but it's like, you're going to have to make sacrifices at some point if you want to get to where we want to go. And that's the Super Bowl. And I think that's obviously the ultimate goal. We love Nick Chubb. We love Wyatt Teller. One of those guys are going to have to be the odd man out, unless you don't want to pay Donovan Peoples-Jones, unless you want to get rid of Amari Cooper. Like, you can't keep everybody. I think that's the ultimate decision at the end of the day, is like, who's going to be the odd man out, because someone's going to have to be that person at the end of the day.
Yeah, and all of that spending on offense, not just the offense that creates issues for, that's a lot of the defensive budget have gone on the O-line. It's gone on Nick Chubb. It's gone on David Njoku. Paul D. Podesta summed up. He said, look, when you find a quarterback, and this I think was like 3-4 years ago, when you find a quarterback you're going to pay, everything changes with roster building. And it does. And hey, if I've got an article coming out at some point, that the theory, if they kept like Jacoby Brissett, signed him to like a 3-year, say 20 million total deal, so like 6.6 million a year, of what could the roster look like? Because effectively that's just a rookie quarterback deal for like a top 10 pick. But just to have that sort of theoretical discussion, because the roster that way looks loaded. It's like, oh, there's so many great players around him. When you pay a quarterback, hey, let's just cut 40 million out the roster. People are like, oh, yeah, we can find that. And it's like, well, that's two Myles Garretts. It's a little bit less than that, but it's like, hey, it's Myles Garrett and Amari Cooper, and going, hey, we'll get rid of them and the rest of the roster's fine. That's the legitimate consequence. And if you pay him a few stars, well, that just means you gut the entire middle of the roster. And that then comes to the consequence of why can't you get constant pressure from the quarterback? Well, because Myles Garrett and literally nothing else is what you can afford on the D-line. And this is the game we play. You pay a quarterback, everything else has to change. And people are like, oh, you can restructure deals. That's stuff you can do for 1 year. That's like, hey, stick a plaster on it and we'll go. It doesn't fix the leak. Else you end up like the Saints and you blow it all up. Everyone leaves. Tom Brady and the Patriots. Why did Tom Brady leave? Because the team blew the cap. They gave up their trade picks and it didn't work out. So balancing act. Difficult. And good luck to AB. It's no easy feat.
Without a doubt. So right now, what the Browns are looking at, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Field Yates of ESPN posted a thing about who led the league in rollover cap. And once again, it was the Cleveland Browns. They rolled over about $27 million in cap space. And so everybody thinks, oh, the Browns have $27 million in cap space this offseason. They're going to be able to add a couple nice pieces. But then when you look at it in reality, I'm over on overthecap.com right now. The Browns are in the red right now. They have $266 million tied up in total liabilities of their on their payroll. Their team salary cap is at $252 million because of the rollover. They're looking at their $14.4 million over the cap right now. So, Jack, just to explain it to the Browns fans who don't seem to still understand the cap, explain why the Browns are in the red, essentially.
Yeah, so what they've been doing when people go, hey, they've got these really low year one money for Deshaun Watson and other guys, they're effectively just loading up a credit card. They're going, hey, let's get a credit card. Let's put loads of money on the credit card and we'll deal with it next year or the year after. At some point, you have to legitimately pay that bill. But effectively, they're just backloading loads of money. And where the numbers were really low last year, hey, they're a lot higher this year. And a lot of that stuff just balances out. So when you see, hey, there's going to be restructures, and I'm sure we'll touch on that, where they'll restructure a deal and it's something like, hey, they've freed up $35 million. Happy days. That $35 million doesn't just disappear. It just raises each of the next few years. So that money's split there. So you're effectively borrowing from the future to pay for the now. And hey, there's an example of what is a credit card. It's exactly that. Obviously, there's no interest penalties or anything like that. But effectively, you'll get loads of extra money to spend now and you reduce what you can spend in the future.
So with that in mind, You've mentioned restructures last year, this year, ways for the Browns to create cap space, push money forward. Obviously, I think the no-brainer would be Deshaun Watson because his contract allows that to happen. I go to over the cap, I hit the restructure feature. It takes his $46 million base salary down to the $1 million again. It lowers his cap number significantly, and the Browns go from $14 million below or over the salary cap to now $19.2 million below the salary cap. So the Browns have flexibility. So, Jack, do you think Watson would be the only contract the Browns restructure this offseason? And I know you wrote an article over at the OBR talking about how they can create $93 million in cap space by restructuring deals. Do you think, is there a pie in the sky scenario where they restructure them all? But could they do that? But why do you think that's a bad idea by the Browns if they were to do that?
Yeah, so let's go for the whole hog and let's say we do everyone. So just to run through who everyone is, it's Watson, it's Cooper, it's Garrett, Teller, Betonio, Chubb, Njoku, Ward. That creates just under $94 million. And then what you're going to do is, hey, next year goes, you lose out of spending ability next year, $23.5 million. The year after you lose $35 million. The year after that, you lose $23 million, and the year after that, you lose $12 million. So that's how it balances out, because effectively all you're doing is kicking that can down the road. So even though you'd do everyone now, and you could just go out and do everyone now, you'd almost need to keep $23 million of that safe just to pay next year, and probably want to keep about $30 million of that just to help out with the year after. So it'd be doing similar to what they did this year, where they created loads of cap space. It looked like, hey, they've got all this money. they don't legitimately have that money to spend because they need to almost keep it in a savings account and hide it to one side to pay for the future. So Watson's the obvious one. They're going to start with Watson. As soon as that deal was signed, I think it was May or something, I wrote an article, it's I believe my second article for the OBR. I was like, hey, this is getting restructured. As soon as I saw the first deal, I was like, that second year, people are like, oh, it's all 46 million every year. That's not going to change. It was always going to change. If they could take bets on restructuring a deal, even if they're offering like minus 1,000, I would be betting everything I have. Just get on it and take whatever money. It's definitely going to happen. And then after that, I think the three that make the most sense is Myles Garrett. Hey, he's under contract for quite a few more years. That's a really important part with restructures. Don't just look at how much money it creates, because Amari Cooper's restructure will create money, but he's only under contract for 2023 and 2024. So you end up with a big hole in 2025. Whereas someone like Myles Garrett, who's got several years under contract, great place to start. And the other one is Teller and Betonio. So I think if those four make the most sense, that's 65.876 million, which gives you a nice figure. And then the next 2 years, that's 16.5 million extra spending that you've got to have safe there. 21 million for the year after, and 12 for the year after that. So I think that's the perfect balancing. And I wouldn't do Nick Chubb and Cooper just because they've only got 2 years left on their deal. And then Njoku and Ward, it's such a small amount. And if they really wanted to get that number down to like the base, they could have just done that in their deal they signed last year. So expect those two guys to stay the way they are. And yeah, why not create that money? And you aren't going to blow all the money straight away. That's one thing to remember, because you need at least 5 million during the season. And the second thing to keep in mind is they are going to backload deals. So when you see, hey, they've got 10 million of cap space, that's not just they sign one player worth 10 million and it's gone. They will backload deals, but in the same way, they're not going to just sign everyone to the min salary and a signing bonus and kick it all into the future. Because if you empty the entire balance, well, suddenly you've got a big problem in 1-2 years when all those guys have to be counted on the cap.
Makes a lot of sense. I think that's the best way that the Browns could continue to balance out their resources by not restructuring everything. I know everybody can think, oh, we can make so much money up. But at the end of the day, you've seen that, like you said, the Saints, the Patriots, I think the Rams are heading down that road for sure too. You got to pay the bill at some point, and it's going to hurt these teams in the long run. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more with Jack about potential roster cuts and another article he wrote over at the RBR. So we'll be right back. And we're back with Jack. So Jack, the other elephant in the room this offseason is the future of John Johnson. Now, there's been media heads that said there's no way the Browns are cutting him because of his cap number. If they cut him now, it's a $12.6 million in dead money and you're not saving much. But need we forget the Austin Hooper deal? I think it was last year. Is it last year or the year before? I kind of forget. But the post June 1st number, that seems to be something that people tend to forget when it comes to manipulating the cap, is that post June 1st release. Go ahead and tell people what to expect with John Johnson's future with the Browns.
Yeah. So it's exactly the same with the Austin Hooper. People pull up over the cap and then they panic because they look straight to the dead money number. Not all dead money is created the same. So I would say the more important number to look over to is base salary and sort of roster bonus, because the prorated bonus is, hey, they've backloaded his money in 2021 with a signing bonus. They've done the same thing in 2022 with an option bonus. And all they're doing is buying on that credit card. Well, they've paid him for 2021 on the credit card. They paid him for 2022 on the credit card. So you don't worry about what you've spent on a credit card and go, oh, I bought a holiday 2 years ago on a credit card. I bought a holiday this year on the credit card. I still need to pay that off. If you can afford to go on holiday, you're looking at what you can afford in that year. You're not so much worried that, hey, I paid for this other holiday. And you've almost got to view them as three separate transactions for each year. What are they going to do this year? And that's why when we get into cash, and cash is just stuff that you give a player cash, and then it lands on the salary cap. So ignore all the prorated bonus stuff. He's due 8.75 million of base salary. and he's due a 1 million roster bonus. And the 1 million roster bonus is due on March 19th. So we're going to find out pretty early in the offseason whether he's gone or not, because that's the turn of the new league year. And what they'll do is they'll use a post-June 1st cut. They're going to do Clowney as one, and then the other ones I expect to be John Johnson. They could easily keep him, but what they're going to do is push that money back. So you just pay the in-season amount in the first year, which is $3.75 million. So you save $9.75 million. And then into next year, you've got the $8.85 million left. But it's just important to remember when looking at that. If you're sat in the front office, you're Andrew Berry, you're Paul D. Podesta, the number you're looking at with John Johnson is he worth $9.75 million for 2023? And if you look at the contract, you can see that on over the cap. Ignore the prorated bonus. My rule of thumb is if it doesn't go up in the year you're looking, you can ignore it because it's all old money. So if you look back at, say, 2022, it jumped up in 2022, so you wouldn't get rid of him for that year. But it doesn't rise from 2022 to 2023. So it's a sure sign that you can just get rid. And I expect it'll be cut. Obviously, Schwartz could come in and go, actually, I really like this guy. I think he's going to be great. I want to keep him. I just think you can probably do better with that money. And he'll probably find someone who's actually a free safety. How cool would that be? The Browns might have a free safety.
That would be nice. That's been something I think we've wanted on this team for quite a few years now. You know, after the Andrew Sendejo experiment in 2020, I think some of us were excited about the John Johnson signing. It just hasn't paid out on and off the field in terms of his leadership and his play. So yeah, I would expect him to be cut, but hey, we don't know what Jim Schwartz wants exactly in the back end of the defense. We'll soon find out for sure. You mentioned Clowney being a post June 1st cut. Can you explain that to Browns fans? Cause everybody already knows he's going to be a free agent. So explain how he's going to be a post June 1st cut.
Yeah. So really weird. I've never seen a contract like this. And I just thought it was a typo on over the cap, but I reached out to them and the contract just voids on a particular date. So usually that date will be sort of before the new league year, so they can go and sign for somebody else. Oh, I believe this is working. It's almost like 2 days into the new league year is when it actually voids. And so what they'll do is before it officially voids, because you can't post June 1st until the new league year, they'll then just cut him with a post June 1st designation. And all that means is that signing bonus that they gave him last year is they'll have one small payment of it in this year, and then the larger part will move back into 2024. So it's just a way of, not only did they backload the deal, they then sort of pushed it even further. So more of the penalties dealt with in 2024 and not in 2023. So, hey, if you're looking at teams that innovate on the cap, you've got the Browns, you've got the Eagles, you've got the Saints. They are by far the most innovative contracts. And it's just a way to manipulate. It's not saving the team any money. It's just dealing with the bigger payment in 2024 rather than 2023. So he's still going to be out and about like a free agent, but technically he will actually be under contract when the new league year comes around. So bizarre, but hey, we're always on an eye out for anything Andrew Berry might do.
Yeah, he's a madman when it comes to these deals. How many guys can a team cut with the post-June 1st designation? Because I always thought it was only one.
So it's two.
Okay.
I believe they made the change with COVID, or it might just been in the last CBA. But yeah, it's two. And just on post June 1st, you can post June 1st cut a guy. The trade is explicitly on the date. So if you want to trade a guy and you look at, say, over the cap or something, you see the post June 1st trade, it has to officially be the 2nd of June or later. You can't do that. And obviously, say a Jakeem Grant, if they cut him after June 1st, then it would be a post-June 1st cut. It's not just two designations. Anyone you do cut later in the offseason would then have that same figure and process around them.
Interesting. You mentioned Jakeem Grant. He's another guy that a lot of people would expect to be a potential roster cut. Outside of Johnson and Grant, who are other names that could potentially be on the chopping block in the offseason, in the early part of the offseason? We won't even mention training camp and et cetera.
So I don't even think Jakeem Grant will go in the early part of the offseason. It's going to be health-based for him. So if they feel there's a chance that he could make the roster, then I think they'll keep him around. If they're terrified that he'll get injured in training camp and they don't think the body's going to hold up, that's when they would cut early. because if he's injured, then it money guarantees and he's protected then. So that's the one part they'll keep in mind with him, because they don't want him on injured reserve. The other guys, I'd expect to be cut at the end of camp. Maybe a trade for Joe Haig, just because he's got 500 grand of base salary. So they might push him out long. And then the other two main guys, Jordan Elliott, Harrison Bryant, I don't expect to be a decision early. They've got an increase in base salary due to the proven performance escalator, because they played so many snaps over the last 3 years. They're probably now going to, I think, move on and just go, we can get someone better. Because if you're paying that guy like 2.6, 2.7 million off the top of my head, suddenly you're going, well, we can get a better tight end too, and say Jordan Akins. And hey, for 2.7 million, I can find you a better defensive tackle, probably from the pub, than Jordan Elliott.
So basically, it's like the Mack Wilson situation last year. Mack got a salary increase. The Browns decided we could get someone else at linebacker cheaper than him. So they did the player-for-player swap with Winovich. That's basically the same example, right?
Yep, 100%. So it's exactly what happened there. Guy plays enough, they'll get a pay rise. And that's something that, hey, it's deserved in basis. Ideally, Jordan Elliott wouldn't have been on the team last year, but I'm not the GM.
So you wrote an article last week after the Browns hired Jim Schwartz as defensive coordinator about potential free agents linked to Jim Schwartz, guys that have played under him, whether it was Tennessee, Philly. I think even I had thought I fooled you with the Jerry Hughes connection to Buffalo. And then you unfortunately informed me that he was still under contract with Houston, which definitely disappointed me last week. But the defense has some significant holes. D tackle, we all know about. We need to find an opposite edge for Miles Garrett. Linebackers, there could be some shakeup there, obviously, with some of our own free agents. But touch on a few names you wrote in your article that you think would be excellent fits for the Browns. And given the Schwartz connection, seems like a perfect fit this offseason.
Yeah, so I do one at each level, because there's a few guys that I think intrigue me. Maybe a few safeties. I've got loads of them. So if we start on the D-line, Javon Hargrave's not happening, guys. Sorry, don't want to be a party pooper, but I'll get that out of the way first. There's another guy, Tavulier or something. He's a restricted free agent. Lots of people have asked me about him for the Titans. It's why he's not included, because if he's good and he's a restricted free agent, they'll keep on to him for a year. But a guy I like is DeMarcus Walker. Productive edge. He's basically on the minimum, I believe, for the Titans. So it's a guy you could pay $1.5-2 million to and come in and be your third edge. I think there's a really good chance that he might be that guy for them, because it's that upgrade on that Mac, the Winovich, where you go, hey, Winovich is okay, but can we get more? And then you get a guy in there that's got a body to play 400, 450 snaps, consistently gets some pressure. That's one guy I would certainly keep an eye on. There's others in there that could be an option, like Mario Edwards, but I like Walker, 32 pressures, 8 sacks last year. That's productive. The one danger is that 8 sacks could price him out of Brown's price range, just because teams overpay for edges. But hey, I wouldn't mind some DeMarcus Walker with the Browns. If we jump to linebackers, I think Anthony Walker's coming back. So work from that basis. But TJ Edwards is potentially an option. Eagles, Browns, neither team likes paying linebackers. So I think he'll end up somewhere else where someone wants to overpay for a linebacker. But Anthony Walker, expectations for me is he returns. Free safety. Yeah, I said free safety. I think we might get one. Marcus Epps is a guy that I like. Didn't really have his breakout under Schwartz in Philly, but it's obviously someone he's accustomed to. If they're going maybe the route of paying Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, then they might not want to pay both. So why both free agents? That's an option there. And then there's a few guys for the third safety. Joshua Kalu for the Titans is the one that intrigues me the most, slightly younger in age. You've got Andrew Adams, who's available as well. Both played on the minimum last year. Both had good seasons. So Adams was 30th best safety for PFF, and Kalu was 42nd. Slightly more pass breakups for Kalu. And yeah, age is on his side. So I think they're good pieces to look at. And you can start building a really, really nice defense, adding in a few more guys. And I don't think it's going to be, hey, Jesse Bates could be fun. And I think there's a chance that that could happen. But I think you're more likely to see just this spread of resources across the team. And that way, it's about elevating the base. I want 11 dudes that can play defense rather than, hey, we've got five guys that can play defense and we've got six Jags.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the theory of Daron Payne coming to the Browns, great in theory. Jesse Bates, great in theory. There's people talking about Hargrave, Fletcher Cox somehow, which I think he retires the Eagle. There's no way he's going to play for another team. Great in theory. But like you said, they need to spread the resources out across the whole defense. We have a top-heavy edge in Miles, a top-heavy corner in Denzel Ward, and then everything else is just kind of meh right now. Like, we need to spread the resources out, use some draft capital, use some cap space to fill in with solid guys on that defense, guys that will benefit Denzel Ward, guys, and Greg Newsome and Grant Delpit and Miles Garrett. Like, we got some core pieces there. We can't just keep throwing top heavy money at all these guys, because it just doesn't work. Like, it works for 1 year, and I know there's people that they're saying the Browns should go all in these next 2 years. Your colleague Jake Burns, I tend to agree, just because of the core pieces we have. But at the same time, we can't go top heavy and then expect, like, oh, we can go get this guy and this guy and this guy, because the resources are just limited at this point. There's no way.
Yeah, exactly that. It's one that you can still go all in without going, hey, I want Daron Payne and Jesse Bates, and that's it. Because suddenly you get a few really nice pieces, but then you're getting nothing. If you saw a defense that is, hey, the linebackers, we're going to rely on Tony Fields and Ragland and JOK's the triple there. Suddenly Jordan Elliott starting next to Daron Payne with a room of Tommy Togiai and Winfrey,
the edge
room, potentially Miles Garrett, Winovich, Alex Wright, Thomas, the safety room. Yeah, it's one that it all sounds good if you go, oh, we'll just do that and we'll have no depth on the team. But then suddenly one of those three, four stars you pay goes down. Well, the whole position room's in disarray and injuries are going to happen. Look what happened to the Bills. They put a lot of reliance in, hey, we're going to pay all this money to this really old dude called Von Miller. Great. Was really successful for the first half of the season. It's no use in the playoffs when he's old because he's banged up and injured. And that sort of stuff has to be factored in, because you've got to expect. And the other thing people hate with free agency, most free agents, especially those on sort of multi-year, let's just say 10 million plus, they're cut within 2 years. Why? Because they're overpaid and they're not very productive. Daron Payne's had this historic contract year. How often do we hear about players, oh, yeah, amazing contract year, and then another team signs them, or the same team signs them? Yeah, it didn't really work out, did it? Carson Wentz, anyone? There is so many examples of this sort of stuff. So shy away from it. If you want to know how teams like the Patriots were building Super Bowl teams, they were adding loads of middle tier guys who could come in and do a job. And that's what you should be chasing. That's what free agency is for. Fill the holes. Don't look for stars. Just look for role players. And they can be starting role players, but guys that can just go come in and do this. Jerry Hughes. If we were paying $5 million to the edge opposite Miles Garrett for the last season and this season, well, suddenly that's an extra $5 million you can spend on Matt Ioannidis, defensive tackle. How nice would that have been? So it's one where you don't have to spend loads of money to solve the problem. Hey, Pochich, what an example. We could have gone out and spent $6 million on a center last year and he wouldn't have been as good as Pochich.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was a bargain that Andrew Berry found in the middle of April. Like, everybody was like, oh, this Ethan Posick guy, he was decent in Seattle and turned out to be top three center in the league. And Andrew Berry got him in the middle of April, right before the draft. It was quite amazing. I mean, yeah, it would be great if we could be like Madden and turn the cap off and build a dream team. But this is reality. It just doesn't work like that. Jack, before I let you go, you know, people have been dogging your boy Dee Podesta the last couple months. Obviously, the last 7 years or so since he's come to Cleveland, but more recently, you know, Tony Grossi writes the article talking about how, you know, Dee Podesta has a hand in the play calling and the game planning, which we all know he has a hand in the game planning to a degree, but the disrespect towards him, people still not understanding what analytics means. It's the dreaded A word, as I like to call it now, because every time anybody hears it, most recently with the whole Sean Desai thing, people just be like, analytics, why? Like, you think people will ever understand what it really means and how it's being utilized, not only in the NFL, but with the Cleveland Browns specifically?
Hey, imagine, go, sod analytics, I'm going to go out and buy a car. Well, don't look at the mileage. Don't look at the how much people sell them for on the market. Don't even look at the state of the car. Just go look at the name and go, yeah, I'll buy that one. Yeah, I'll let you look at what color it is. You'd be nuts, legitimately nuts, to go, oh, I don't care how much distance it's done. I don't care what state it's in. Oh, has it got four tires? No, you're not allowed to check that. That's data. And it's just data and information. And it's not one that you are just running by a computer, because if you were, you wouldn't be paying a running back loads of money. You wouldn't be paying a backup running back loads of money. You wouldn't be kicking extra points. You'd be taking field goals. You wouldn't be drafting kickers. I promise you that. There's so many anti-analytics thing this front office does. Just the front office with the play calling as well. So much bits and pieces. And the funny thing is, what point did it change from Paul D. Podesta does nothing, works part-time on the West Coast, to he's now controlling everything? And it was like there was no transition. It just went from one day Tony Grossi thought, oh, let's blame him. And off he went. So the whole thing is just fascinating. It's like everyone uses data in every aspect of their life. It's just the way the world works, and it's making sensible decisions. It's not running everything by data, because you just let the computer then run it and you can put that in. So there's so many other factors in play, but data is important. Every team around the NFL is drafting younger. If you look at the last 10 years, that trajectory line just keeps getting younger. So this idea that Andrew Berry's the only one that drafts age is not. Every team is doing it. Yeah, they're a year younger. We're talking 1 year, not overly dramatic difference. So yeah, lots of stuff gets completely overblown. It's pretty much just relax and enjoy it. We legitimately could see a group here in Deep Podesta, Andrew Berry, in Kevin Stefanski that are here 10 years. And that has knock-on impact for, you don't just have to have rare, amazing benefit within your player coaching development and everything else and the luck of the draft and free agency. You're naturally going to get a massive benefit. The Steelers don't have some secret key to drafting well, or even player development being so much better than everyone else. It's just the distance, the same office going, hey, this is what I want. These are the players. Get the players for the coach. And then everything progresses. So stability is key. Obviously, you don't have stability for stability's sake. If we don't make the playoffs, good chance everyone's getting fired this year. So let's see. Exciting times.
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole Deep Podesta criticism, like, it went away when the Browns started winning. And then once, you know, back-to-back losing seasons, like, everybody wants to start pointing the finger again. And Deep Podesta is an easy target because everybody thinks he's the mastermind. They think he's like today's baseball, how it's operated, because, you know, a lot of the teams, like, coaches or the managers of baseball teams are like puppets, and the front office tells them what to do. And they feel like that's what Deep Podesta is trying to run. And Stefanski's his puppet. Now, Stefanski denied it in radio interviews last week, but, like, I don't think that's the case. Like, if it was so bad, like, why are other teams wanting our assistants in the front office? Why are teams interviewing our assistant coaches? Like, it's not as bad as everybody thinks. Yeah, the win-loss record hasn't been great the last 2 years, but obviously the Browns have something here in Cleveland because teams are trying to poach some of our key people in the front offices and the coaching staff. I mean, I just don't think it's as crazy as people make it out to be. Like you said, if they win, these guys could all be in line for extensions again. But if they don't win, everybody could be out the door. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting offseason for sure. It's going to be fun to watch, and I can't wait for it to get going.
Yeah, and if that's anything, it's like, hey, they need to win now. And what's the best route to winning? Is it 1-2 stars, or is it let's just that whole middle tier of roster, let's add 7 dudes? And that's the dramatic difference of, hey, if you add 7 guys, how's that look different to two guys? And I would much rather have the seven and have the safety that someone gets injured. The last thing you want is you spend all this money on one of you guys, one of them goes down, and we're having the same problem again next year. So I think it's going to be fascinating. And it's lots of stuff that, hey, Andrew Bates, I feel he made mistakes like this on the D-line of going very all the eggs in one basket. Are we going to see a shift of different stuff? A lot of stuff Andrew Berry's done has been good. There's been lots of it that I don't agree with, and I haven't been shy about saying. So let's see if he starts really spreading that investment, and fingers crossed we'll see it. And no more paying backup running backs loads of money. We had Matt Ioannidis rather than Kareem Hunt last year, which people panned me for saying, spend it on a DT, spend it on a wide receiver. We'd be in the playoffs. Yeah, we probably wouldn't make it to the final four, but we'd have been in the playoffs this year. And instead, we got Jordan Elliott starting. So,
hey, Duffin, you may be a madman, but you're a genius madman.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Thank you so much for the time, man. You're doing fantastic work at the OBR. I couldn't be prouder, because you started your writing with us for the most part, and you know, we were happy to see you move on to such a great great site with a great group. Talk about what you got going on over there, and of course, plug your Twitter for people to follow you.
Yeah, so it's at Jack Duffin, Duffin. Loads of stuff going on there. So follow me on Twitter. There's all the stuff. But yeah, OBR articles coming out everywhere. What have I got? I've got a trade series article, because people wound me up last season saying, hey, Kareem Hunt, we can trade him for a second. There's a guy that told me you can trade him for late first. He's that good. I didn't believe it. And what I wanted to do is just take the orange glasses off and just go, legit, let's look at the market for trading X position, X player, and what do we get as realistic values. It's not saying we should trade them all, so Miles Garrett's in the two firsts, still don't do that trade. But it's just going, what is that player realistically going to get if the Browns went and traded him? So that's one series. There's another series going on where Jake Burns said, hey, have a look at last offseason and go, what are we getting for guys in free agency? Were they good moves? Were they bad moves? Sort of. And we've just called it the GM performance review. So I'm sat there grading Andrew Berry's homework. Let's see how he did. Some element of hindsight, but not too much. If some cheap 1 million player suddenly had a breakout season, we're not saying, how did Andrew Berry not see that? It's looking at the realistic targets and going, hey, did he pick the right guys? There was a whole series I've already done predicting the 2023 roster. So that's position by position, what's going into each decision room, and then a look at what that roster looks like. There was one, the restructure you mentioned, which went bananas, and the other article that just crazy how many people read it was the free agents and under Schwartz, so looking at the links there. There is so much more coming. There's a series going to look at Andrew now signed and added like 200 players across the Browns roster for his 3 years. So looking at all position by positions, what age, height, all this sort of data does he tend to look for? The guardrails for the draft has come out. This has all come out since like Jan. So there is so much content over there. So early looks at the guardrails, sort of which guys are they likely or unlikely to draft. And then yeah, I've got another piece coming out on the 1st of Feb with Brad Ward. Looking at free agent targets position by position. Who's a yes, who's a maybe, who's a no. So just to set some sort of expectations of, yeah, don't even look at this guy. Oh, this guy's intriguing. This guy, go after him. Let's do it. Okoronkwo, I'm looking at you. Edge out of Houston. That man needs to be an orange and brown.
Fantastic work as always, man. Glad to call you a friend. Glad we were able to share a few drinks in Miami. That was a blast, even though I was under the weather at the time. The Browns backer party and the tailgating was fun. The game, not so much, but always proud to call you a friend, buddy, and always enjoying your work. So keep it up.
All right, cheers. That feels like about 3 years ago, and it's like 3 months.
I know.
2 months.
It's so crazy. Like, I got back from from Miami and kept getting sick. So that was just how my December and into January went. But yeah, that was a blast. Hopefully we can meet up again for some drinks down the road for a Browns game, and hopefully it's a winner.
100%. I'm sure there'll be several down the road. Eventually, I'm going to have to come to this great state of Ohio.
Yes.
One day. I will get there. Yes. Just not for the next few years. I've got loads of plans, so we'll get there.
Understandable. Definitely keep up the great work, man. And we'll have you on the podcast again, I think, at some point during the off season.
No, 100%. You know to grab me. So, no. Brown, this is going to be an exciting time of the year, guys. Strap up. Let's race through the next 2 months. I cannot wait for it.
Absolutely. With that in mind, you guys can follow me on Twitter at JackMcCurry08. You can check out the Dogland at the Dogland. Be sure to subscribe to Dogs by Nature to check out not only us, but the Dogs Table as well. Until next time, Browns fans, as always, as we get on out of here, go Browns.
Go Browns.